People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In my case, it was your entire family is in danger. We're about to freeze all your bank accounts. You have to take your money out immediately if you want to be able to have access to it.
Hello, and welcome to Financial Podcast Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I'm so excited to welcome our expert guest today, Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining. So why don't you tell, we were just chatting a little before the show, but why don't you tell our audience who you are, a little bit about your background. I naively thought you were just a financial journalist, but you've done so much more.
Yeah, I write about personal finance for The Cut. I'm a columnist there. And I also write about lots of other things, including work and parenting more recently, now that I am a parent. I was an editor at The Cut, and I also was an editor, a features editor at Harper's Bazaar. So I've been in journalism covering lots of different things for a number of years. And my sort of approach to financial writing is actually more as a layperson, someone who is interested in it, interested in sort of how money fits into our lives. But I'm not an actual expert. I'm not certified in anything. I am just a person who was asking questions. And I think that hopefully by doing that, I can sort of bridge the gap between a lot of struggles that normal people have with money and actual expert advice that I can get from actual experts like you.
Yeah. Well, the hard part is no one is taught personal finance, but we're all involved in personal finance. And I think that's kind of where it gets a little tricky is it should be taught. I wish it was taught in school because you come out into the world and if you weren't taught at home, which a lot of people aren't taught personal finance at home, you're just thrown into the world of personal finance and it really is imperative that you're good at it or that you have an education in it so that you can succeed in it. And then if you go to read on it, sometimes it can be like reading a medical journal, which I can't do, or a science journal, like all those areas that have specific language and jargon. And so it can be a bit complex if you're trying to learn it on your own.
Yeah, it can also be, I have found like a little bit rigid, like a lot of, you can always find like what you're supposed to do, but there's like very little space in there for like, okay, well then what happens if this happens? Or like, if I'm already so far behind, like what do I do? I don't know. I think you know, people like you and I think more and more personal finance writing is exploring that human side a little bit more. But it has, you know, it takes a while. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people find it so intimidating.
Yeah, it is very rigid. And because if you're licensed in the business, it can't be deemed advice, has the education. So therefore, it becomes very generic when it's out in the world to be read. And so it's not very prescriptive. So yeah, you're right. If you don't fit the exact thing, definition they're defining or the exact you know, item they're explaining, then it doesn't really help.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I asked you to come on because I was doing some research on what is a now $1 trillion industry, which is fraud and financial crimes, which is sad to say that this is a $1 trillion industry, but it is. And the severity of it and the sophistication of it has changed so dramatically. We get trained on senior crimes and financial crimes every year, and it's just changed so dramatically in the time that I've been in personal finance, these 11 years. And I had read an article that you wrote, and then when I went through something with a client, which we'll talk about, I saw your article again. And so then I wanted to have you on to kind of talk about briefly what happened to you, and then also how can people protect themselves against what is now an industry?
Yeah, it's a huge industry. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, and it also grew practically overnight. Like it went from like a $2 or $3 billion industry to like, I haven't seen the $1 trillion number recently, but you know, definitely well over $10 billion was the figure that I last saw from the FTC. But I'm sure worldwide it must be.
Yeah,
you
so
know.
The World Economic Forum puts it down as a $1 trillion industry.
Yeah,
when you're looking globally.
I mean, I certainly don't doubt it, especially because the FTC's numbers are just what is reported, and that has been estimated to be, like, at the very best, less than half, but at worst, 1 in 40 incidents are reported. So those numbers that we do have are likely like a really the tip of the iceberg.
And so you were also a victim of a financial crime. And the reason I want to discuss it is I think that there is this opinion that it won't happen to me, which I think is a naive opinion personally. Also, like with divorce, I say to people, well, no one says I want to get divorced. No one goes into a marriage saying I'd like to get divorced, right? And so I don't think anyone signs up for something and says, oh yeah, I want to be the victim of a crime or a financial crime. But sometimes these things happen. But there are steps I think you can take to protect yourself. But it is hard though, because it's so prevalent it's become so sophisticated, in my opinion.
It has become really sophisticated. And I think that there are certain things that you can protect yourself. You can do to protect yourself. But I also want to be careful about like saying that that is how we will like solve this problem. Like there right now, that is literally the only thing that people are saying about this. Like, we just have to protect ourselves better. But that puts so much onus on the individual to fight back against this like incredibly sophisticated industry that really like that should not be the only line of protection. And I also think that that does like I want to be very wary of setting up any dynamic where we say that if someone gets scammed, it's because they didn't protect themselves well enough. And I know that that's not what you're implying, but I want to be very clear that I think that like in some cases, there really is no way to protect yourself. Like these people are just incredibly sophisticated.
So what do you think you can do to take, what actions would you recommend that you could take to protect yourself? And also, what do you think we can do as a whole? I don't want to say to prevent the industry,
yeah,
but the fact it's growing by leaps and bounds domestically and globally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these really... there was just this huge, really heartbreaking piece in the Wall Street Journal about these, like, essentially they're compounds
slaves.
Or even farms, people who've been
kidnapped to,
like they're victims of human trafficking and they're forced to do these things. And a lot of those people are more involved in like texting scams. Like they're not necessarily the people who are calling you on the phone, but some of them might be. And I think that. You know, like it's a very, very sophisticated industry at this point. The things that you can do to protect yourself, I think one of them is sort of going back to your initial point, is to remember that everyone is vulnerable and to kind of like be mindful of your own susceptibility. And I think like most other people, I really thought that I wasn't vulnerable. I kind of thought I knew better. And I had this picture in my mind of like, oh, most people who get scammed are elderly and like can't use the computer and are like, what's this face place? Like they just like don't, mm-hmm. they're not technologically literate. And and of course I also get like phishing emails all the time. I get like random spam calls from like tons of scammers all the time. And it's like, oh, that's just obviously a scam. Like I will just ignore it. So I kind of felt like I already like knew a scam when I saw one, and I knew how to just like kind of like swat it away. And it was just an annoying element of modern life. But the data actually shows that the preventative or the sort of protective characteristics that we think of, like being younger, being relatively tech savvy, kind of like being a generally like intelligent and functioning person, those are not protective against getting scammed. In fact, people who are under 60 are actually 34% more likely to lose money to scams than people over 60. And it's different types of scams that appeal to them. It's really like the difference is in what type of scam you get targeted with. So like,
targeting the under 60? What's the prominent difference?
Yeah, I can't speak to like all of the scams out there, and a lot of them evolve very quickly. A lot of them are like retailer scams or ads that pop up that are for scam businesses. A lot of them are for like third party things. Like these are just examples that I've heard of. A lot of them are like ticket sales for things, or like on Facebook Marketplace or things like that, where it's like a third party vendor. So people like go to buy something and then it never shows up, and they're like, wait a minute. And then they realize that it was a scam. So those are more common for younger people. For older people, there are two different types of scams overall. One is an opportunity-based scam, which is like, oh, here's this great investment opportunity. Or like, here, buy these cool boots that you have been wanting to buy for half the price from this website. Or romance scams also fall under this, which are like so devastating.
Terrible. Those are terrible.
Yeah. Like so cruel. And also like a lot of this sort of like Bitcoin that would also be investor based. But like I know someone who is a tech journalist who fell for a Bitcoin scam. Like these are people who like he is like a very intelligent person by every measure. And he still fell for it. So like I just want to point out that these are not like just for dotty grandmas. Like these are for like very well-educated people who have a lot at stake. And not to say that like they don't, that, you know, like certain people deserve to get scammed more than others. But like I make that point just to say that a lot of people think of themselves as too smart for scammers. And it's just like the evidence shows otherwise.
I also think it's interesting to point out that the scams are different. So that's how it's so sophisticated,
yes.
Right? So
yes.
They know how to target someone under 60 versus over 60, how to target someone who's good at technology versus someone who's not good at technology. And so the scams are different. So like what happened to a woman I know is very different than what happened to you based on technology and generational differences is what I'll say, because just because you're not good at technology doesn't mean you're not smart. You know, we just have generational differences.
I do want to point out, sorry, the other, because there are two different types of scams. Mm-hmm. The other type is a threat-based scam. And that's what I was targeted with. And it is like, oh, you didn't show up for jury duty and you're going to be arrested unless you post bond or bail or whatever. Or, oh, we've kidnapped your son. Here's an AI-generated version of his voice. If you don't send money immediately, like something terrible will happen to him. Or in my case, it was your entire family is in danger. We're about to freeze all your bank accounts. You have to take your money out immediately if you want to be able to have access to it. So those are the two different types of scams. And they not just appeal to different sort of demographics, they also appeal to different psychologies. So for me, like an opportunity-based scam was like not probably going to land because I wasn't like, you know, like looking around for like some fancy new investments. And
right,
I'm happily married. I'm not like looking for someone to like sext with. So whereas this threat-based scheme that threatened my family very explicitly, and they knew a lot of personal information about me and my family, that was terrifying. And I complied.
I think that anybody who got a call where they said they were going to threaten their family, if you have a family, right? So if you're a single person, that would be obviously wouldn't land for that person. Mm-hmm. As you said, you're not interested in some shiny new investment opportunity to double your money. So, but that's how, I think that shows the sophistication aspect of this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they called you with information on your family and threatened your family. If you said, I don't have a family, like, what are you talking about? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't have gone anywhere. And vice versa with maybe on the single person, you know, they're going after a different strategy with that individual to target and prey upon their weaknesses. So that's, I think for me, that's the scary part, is it's so sophisticated. They're not just blanketing, scamming everybody. They're really targeting and being, looking at who their victim is and playing out the victim to what they think the weaknesses might be.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I don't want to get ahead of your questioning. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You're fine.
Okay. A lot of people have asked me if I think I was like, why I was targeted, like if they, you know, like saw my name somewhere, like what it was about me. And the real reason is actually much more random. And this also kind of speaks to what you were saying about like how we can protect ourselves. A lot of people are like, oh, we just have to do a better job of protecting our personal information. And I don't know if, like, yes, there are certain things that you could do to protect your personal information, but also we should all just be aware that it is probably out there. Like, I get emails and like letters in the mail almost every month being like, oh, like, I don't know. I literally just got one from, I think it was like Ticketmaster or like one of those like ticket, you know, ticket vendors.
Ticketmaster.
Yeah. That was like, we've had a breach, like a data breach. So FYI, but like our vet had one, and like, you know, somewhere that I once went for like, I don't know, I think like a hand x-ray, like that place had one. You know, like you get them all the time. And you're always just like, all right, like there's nothing I can really do. But whenever that happens, that data, I'm like, have fun with that x-ray of my hand. Like, who cares? But that information actually gets scraped and sorted and bundled and sold on the dark web. And when there is a big enough bundle sort of surrounding your name and your identity, that's when these more sophisticated, those bundles cost are more valuable. Sure. And that's when a really sophisticated scammer can sort of make a run at you. So I don't think it was anything to do with me or them, like knowing that I had like cash in the bank or anything like that. I think it really was just like my number was up. Like they had enough, they had sort of like scraped together enough information about me that they knew they could really scare me, and they did.
What you speak to is true, because I just got the Ticketmaster letter that there's been a breach. I have had my information breached so many times that it's just like, oh, another breach. Because as you pointed out, yeah, you can try and get your information off the internet, but how? Because you have no control who, like, if you're going to go work with the bank, you can't say, I don't want my information in any of your third-party vendors. Well, then you can't have a banking relationship.
Yeah.
So it just multiplies, right? So your bank uses these five vendors. Delta uses a bunch of vendors you don't know about. So does American Airlines. So if you're going to fly now, all the vendors that service the airlines have. So all of your information, as you said, is already out there. I did not realize it was getting sold on the dark web. And that makes sense. If they get enough of your information, you can be more targeted for a crime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you believe in, or have you subscribed to any, like, because identity theft is another one, right? Where if they get enough of your information, they can steal your identity. Do you believe in any of the services that provide insurance around this? Like LifeLock is the first one that comes to mind. where it's protecting some of your data?
That's a good question. I like don't have a good answer for that, to be honest. Okay. Like I haven't really like researched those.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from Whole Foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/future-rich. That's drinkag1.com/future-rich. Check it out.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I was just curious because it does seem like when people say like, well, the way you can prevent a scam is get your information offline. I don't think that's viable. Like, I don't think in this day and age, if you're a consumer and you use various services and goods that are out there in the world, like flying, transportation, I don't think there's a way to get your information offline. Like, I just don't think that's possible.
Yeah. I mean, you can try, but like, it's going to be a lot of effort for, like, very dubious results, I think. But the things that you can do, and which I have done, are also just basic things that I think anyone should do, which is to lock your credit. And you can do that very easily. through the three major credit bureaus. And if someone calls you and they're like, we've opened up these credit cards and these, you know, like purchased all these properties under your name, you can be like, you're lying because you can't do that. So that is one way to protect yourself. It does mean that anytime you want to open a new line of credit, you do have to unfreeze your credit, which is not, you know, it just requires a couple of days of notice sometimes. So in my case, I had frozen my credit before when I'd been worried that my identity might have been stolen. But then I had, you know, I was applying for a new credit card for some reason. And so I had unfrozen it and I just never frozen it again. And so, you know, my credit wasn't frozen. It is frozen once again now. But another thing that you can do is make sure that you have an account with the IRS so that you have a login with the IRS. And that also prevents other people from filing tax returns on your behalf. And a lot of scams are sort of like saying people saying that they're calling from the IRS, like you owe back taxes or you know, are in trouble. Someone stole your identity and is using your tax information to file for all of this, you know, like that. I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the IRS and like don't fully understand how it works. And so the best way, obviously, the ideal situation would be to be more well-versed in tax information, but I think that's unrealistic for most people. So the better thing is to just create a tax ID and make sure that you have all of your information in a login through the IRS, and that prevents other people from filing your taxes on your behalf or threatening to do so.
Okay. And any other steps that you took?
I don't pick up my phone. Like I have just a couple of, I only have approved numbers, and it's not ideal. Like there are sometimes calls that I really needed to take that I missed, but I have a setting on my phone where I don't, like, it doesn't even come up. It just goes straight to voicemail if it's not on my approved callers list. Again, that's not like realistic for everyone. But it has also like provided me with some peace of mind at this point.
I also think that's a good idea because the impetus for this was I know a woman who was scammed out of the majority of her net worth, which at a certain age is very traumatic because there isn't the time to earn it back, right? So yeah. It's just gone. And unfortunately, with regulation change, you used to be able to get a tax deduction for money lost to a scam, meaning, so to give listeners an example, if you lost $500,000 of your retirement, you then wouldn't owe the taxes on that, which in theory could be around 30%, you know, give or take. So it's $150,000 that you owe in addition if it wasn't withheld to that, or money that could be retrieved from the IRS because you were a victim of a scam. So that's a pretty substantial difference between what we used to have before this industry really kicked up, I would say, is that this was it was tax deductible if you were a victim of a scam. It's no longer tax deductible, so you cannot write it off on your tax return, which is a very dramatic difference. And so I think, to me, it means you, especially for the senior community, senior citizens, you have to be even more careful, because if you get scammed out of retirement assets and you don't quantify the tax ramifications, you could have a tax bill. So you could be hit twice. So you could be scammed out of the money and then go to file your taxes and then owe a six-figure amount, right? And then where do you come up with that money if you're 75 years old?
Yeah.
How do you
It's devastating.
That?
Yeah.
Yeah. Devastating. Yes. I think all of them are devastating, and they all are devastating in a different capacity, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah.
And so I just think it needs to be, as this is growing into be a very sophisticated industry, and as you brought up, which we didn't, you know, I hadn't really thought about, but there are just different types. There's the romance ones, there's the threat ones, there are the investment ones. There's all different types of crimes, and they prey on all different types of people. And I would agree, there is no exception to that, that everybody is vulnerable. But I think it's so important to be talked about, because as you said, not everyone's reporting it. And if it's, I feel like the more it's talked about, the more you can help prevent it. And then hopefully it resolves a little bit of the trauma a bit, right? Because then if you do fall victim and you don't tell anybody, that's a very isolating experience. And it is really happening to more people than we're hearing, a lot more people than we're hearing about.
After this story came out, like, I can't go anywhere without someone being like, I got scammed too. Like, they are truly everywhere. And I, like, it's funny because people now are always just like, I just wanted to tell you so you know you're not alone. And I'm like, no one knows more than me that I'm not alone. but I also, like, I do also feel really bad for a lot of people because they don't have an outlet to talk about it. And what's even worse is that the stigma actually perpetuates the scams. There was a really great study that was done by the FTC looking at people who were targeted by scams and the differences between the people who lost money and the people who didn't. The biggest differentiator was not age or education level or like financial literacy. It was just if the victim had heard of a similar scam happening to someone else. So that to me like really speaks volumes, right? Like the more we stigmatize victims, then the bigger disservice we do to everyone else, and the more we actually perpetuate the scams.
Yeah, I think knowing that scams are out there and that everybody is vulnerable, or if you have the mindset that everybody is vulnerable and it's less that you're not literate or you're not good at technology, right? That there's something, you have a deficit somewhere, which is why you were the victim, I think is super important. And the other thing I always say, I'm curious if you agree, is but I always say there's never an emergency. Like nothing has to be done today. There is no realm, especially with a government entity, that it has to be done today. Like the IRS takes years to figure out you made a mistake on your tax. Literally years to figure out you made a mistake. So it does not need to be dealt with today. If they call it today, it's just not, they stop work at 5. It does not need to be done today. And you can always love it. So what I always say when I'm trying to educate people on the being vulnerable for financial crime is, there is no emergency. Like, if they call you and say it has to be done today, it doesn't. You could wait till call me tomorrow and we can talk about it, right? Like, they create this false sense of now, which
with urgency.
Especially with the urgency, and especially when you're dealing, if they're saying it's a government agency like the IRS, like, it definitely does not need to be done now. The IRS took 3 years to figure this out, right? That there's a problem or however long. And so that's why I always say that you don't need to answer your, I also advise that you don't need to answer your phone if you don't know who it is. They can leave a voicemail. If it's a family member and it's the only time there'd be areas like a family member and there's an emergency, right? You have their number programmed. If it's someone you've never met before, it shouldn't be an emergency. And so I always just try to say the urgency is not real. And so we want to always wait before we make a massive decision.
Yeah.
If possible.
No, that's very good advice.
Yeah, the situation would depend on the scam, right? So in a threat scam, there is a level of urgency they've created. It's very different than like a financial crime or identity theft, or all of those other ones, romance. But I always like to just try to say, like, it's not an emergency. So let's try and take some time to think through and like and reach out to your network, right? Which is why that stigma, if we can get rid of the stigma, you could call somebody and say, here's what's happening. What do you think, right? And I think that part is important too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, a lot of these people, they use specific techniques. It's called blocking the exits when they really make you feel like you have nowhere to turn. So they'll specifically say, like, don't talk to your family. Don't tell anyone this is happening. This is something that, you know, like in my case, they were saying, you know, if you tell anyone, then they are going to be implicated in this investigation that you're swept up in. And so by not telling anyone, you are actually keeping them safe. Like, it was just they can be very manipulative. But I agree. I think that the best thing that you can possibly do, if you can, if something feels fishy, I mean, everything about this exchange that I had with these people felt fishy and it felt wrong, but I was so scared that I was too afraid to fight back. And I think that if there is truly any way, like, make up a reason to get off the phone, lie to them, say you feel sick, like just anything at all. They told me that my phone was tapped and that my house may be bugged. like I was like super paranoid, but I also I still couldn't quite believe it. Like I wish I had just like gone into the bathroom and made a phone call, or like there are so many ways in which I like think back on this day and think of all the different things that I could have done to stop it. But they really use like every technique in the book to manipulate you and make you feel like you have no choice but to follow their directions.
Yeah, that's the scary part. But yeah. I would say, so your biggest takeaways would be, I think one, acknowledging that anybody can be a victim of a crime, financial mm-hmm. or not, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah. So that's, I just think knowing that I was kidnapped once. So like, I didn't want to get kidnapped, right? I wouldn't be like, hey, yeah. I'd like to get kidnapped in another country. No, no one signs up right. for that. Could I have made maybe some better choices? Sure. Would the outcome have been different? Maybe, but you have no idea.
Yeah.
So anybody can be the victim of a crime. I think blocking your credit also is a great idea. Knowing that you have to unlock it or unfreeze it in order to get credit. And as you said, as long as you know what the process is, it's fine. You just have to know that you have to give yourself some time to process the paperwork. I love the idea of creating an account with IRS.
Yeah, it's identity. Super easy. It also like allows you to look up your taxes online, and then there's it like for people like me who really just need to kind of like know where things stand, it's very helpful.
Yeah, I think that's great. And then I also think, like, as you said, not picking up the phone.
Yeah, very
or
simple.
Or getting off the phone. If it feels uncomfortable, make up an excuse to get off the phone.
Yeah, yeah. And have like even just have a I thought this was a little hokey when I heard it, but someone told me like have a script. Like if you feel like something's going, if I think this is especially good for people who might be kind of vulnerable. I had a conversation with my parents about this, that like if something seems off, just like call me, like truly call me anytime. Have like a person that you know to call, and have a script that's like, I'm so sorry, I am getting another phone call from a doctor that I need to take or whatever, you know, and get off the phone.
Yeah, I don't think having a script is hokey, because what they say, right, is if you train yourself to do something, because in the moment you're feeling anxiety, you're feeling all sorts of feelings, right? Like anxiety, yeah. pressure, uncomfortableness. And so if you just have a script that even if you've practiced, which might sound hokey, you are more likely yeah. to execute on it, which is why yeah. with all sort of emergency response people, right? They practice over and over and over and over again so that it's an automatic reaction. There is no thinking then when there is an emergency. So it's the same concept, right? So if you have the script, and even if you practice it, which I think would be a great idea, especially if you might consider yourself to be vulnerable, then it's more of a reaction than a thought process, right? You're just reacting with your script of, I feel uncomfortable, so now I say this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's great.
Like if, yeah, I was like trying, I was like, I think I should talk to a lawyer before I do this, and they were like, no, you can't talk to a lawyer. If you talk to a lawyer, we can't help you anymore. Sure. They had their script down so well yeah. that anytime I said the kinds of things that I think would go through anyone's mind, like, oh, why don't I just like go to the police station and kind of sort this out there, like they had a response to that. So you have to have your own script.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I'm sure that this is a business, right? So they know what your objections are going to be. They're going to say, mm-hmm. you're going to say, the most likely you're going to have 10 things you're going to say, and they already have the script for it. So I agree.
Exactly.
I actually think coming up with the script for it and having a plan, if you get on a conversation with something or someone that makes you feel uncomfortable, this is what you do. You say, I have a doctor calling. I need to get off. I'll call you back off. Mm-hmm. And then you have somebody you feel comfortable calling, because that's other thing, right? It's not being isolated during the process.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love the idea of a script.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. I've like brought this up to my editor and she was like, that sounds kind of weird. Do people really do that? And I was like, I do.
No, I do, because if you've heard about, like, my uncle's a firefighter, my husband's a ski patroller. So they practice and practice and practice. And the reason why is because in the moment, there is so much adrenaline, right? And there's all these, you can't be like, okay, now what do I do? It has to be a reflex that
instinctive.
They don't even
they're
not thinking about what they're doing. They've done it 400 times in training. They just do it. And I kind of think that's what you're trying to replicate here with the script, is when you were doing it on the phone, you were thinking it through out loud, right? Which is what a normal person would do, is like, okay, hold on, maybe I'll do, and then they're hearing what you're thinking about because you're verbalizing it. And so then they have the reason to cut you off. But if it was just like automatic, it's so much easier if it's automatic.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a really good point, especially when you're in sort of like fight or flight mode, which I very much was. And I think which is right where they want you. Like,
because you're not thinking. You are not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I was in a training one time and it was a woman from the ATF. And so they did a training where how do you get the gun back from, and I didn't verify this, but she told me how you get the gun away from a suspect. And then you do the training over and over. So every time you do the training, you get the gun, you give it back, you do it again. So in real life, they got the gun from the suspect, but because they trained with giving it back to do it again, they gave the gun back to the suspect. So they had to change the whole training. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because you do it, right? So in practice, right, you like disarm the suspect. Okay, great. Do it again. Hand the gun back. Do it again. Hand the gun back.
So automatic. Yeah.
It became in a real life situation. She said the problem was the training was they handed the gun back in training to do it again.
The repetition was too good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But that, I think that proves the point of like, if you have a script and you learn it, even if you practice it a couple times, you now have a plan of action for when you feel that flight or flight. Did I say that right? But yeah.
Yeah.
Now your body has a reaction to go to or a process, right? Which you're not having to really a response. I think it's great. I think that's actually... No, because you want to have a anything where you're dealing with a severe situation, right? Whatever it is, but you're getting that physiological response where you're not thinking clearly, right? And your senses are heightened. I do think, which is why in schools they practice fire drills, right? There's a reason they practice all of these scenarios, whether you work in that type of industry where you're a first responder or you work in a building. Like, we're all at Bloomberg. We practice fire drills. I think we're one of the first companies after 9/11 to practice evacuating the whole building. Prior to that, they didn't do it because their attitude was, well, everybody knows how to go out the building. Well, psychologically speaking, if there's a problem in a building, you tend to go out the exit you tend to try and exit the building the way you came in. And that's not always the way to go out if there's an emergency.
Right.
Which is why in big companies and schools, they practice getting people out because the way you came in is not going to be the way you go out because not everybody can get out at that same time if there's an emergency. So I actually think if you think of this as like an emergency situation, which it would be, what is your response going to be and how do you practice for that?
Yeah, that's a really good idea. You do scam drills.
Yeah, because no one wants to get scammed, but we're all vulnerable. So if you have a protocol in place, I just think that's a great way to protect yourself.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think a lot of people also think they know what they would do in a scam situation. And it is not what they actually do.
Right, because everyone can think what they would do. And then you put yourself in a situation, whether it's this or another crime, and you don't know how you react. I think the reality of it is you have to be honest and say you probably don't know how you'll react in one of those situations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think part of what makes it difficult is that we do get targeted by scams every day. I'm sure you do. I do all the time. Yeah. And it's very easy to just be like, oh, whatever, and sort of like blow past it. So I think that we actually have this false sense of security because we are targeted so often that we think that we already know how to deal with it when it's just that we only know how to deal with certain types of scams.
Yeah, I think all the things you said are great, but I also really love the script idea, and that's not something I would have thought of. But when you think about like when you were in school, you practice fire drills, right? Or like
And then also like what to do with when like strangers offered you candy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like I remember my mom being like, if someone says that I came to pick you up, here's the family password, or here's what you say back to them. And I think it can be really useful to have that stuff.
Yeah, because we practice in all other areas of our life except for this. And this is very prevalent.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Well, this was fascinating. I really appreciate you coming on to talk about it. I can't wait to air this episode because I think it's something that we individually need to be aware of, but I also think it's important to be aware of it for our parents and other relatives that are also probably going to be targeted and maybe aren't up to speed on everything that's happening, and that this is now globally a $1 trillion industry, definitely a $1 billion industry in the United States. So it affects
10 billion.
Everyone in your circle. Yeah, 10 billion. It affects everyone in your circle. So I really want to educate, and specifically, I know that they do, I've seen, at least my little worldview, is that they target women a lot.
Yeah, I think they do. I think, though, that men are just as vulnerable. It may also be that women are reporting it more than men. It's just like, it's really hard to know.
Yeah. Okay, so be safe out there, everybody. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for these great questions.
For all of our lovely listeners, you can follow along on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend and subscribe.
Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.